Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Brian Adams. I'm a PhD student at Mississippi State University under the direction of Drs. Angus Ketchot and Jeff Gore. Today, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some research we completed around 2010-2011, which is a comparison of tarnished plant bug populations from different regions in Mississippi. So I realize a lot of you in here are not too familiar with Mississippi. Just to give y'all a little breakdown of the agricultural regions in Mississippi, if you'll take a look at the green area toward the left side of the map there, that's the western border of the state. It's made up by the Mississippi River. That area is known collectively as the Delta, and the Delta is basically a flat, wide open landscape, and it's made up probably well over 75% of that land is dedicated to row crop agriculture, so it's very wide open, very flat. A lot of good fertile farm ground, and collectively the other agricultural region in Mississippi is known as the Hills, which is comprised, as you see, of the Red Clay Hills, the Black Prairie, and the Appalachian Foothills. This is a much more diverse landscape, a lot smaller fields, much more rolling topography throughout it, much more interspersed with trees, pasture land, things like that. So there's a whole lot less of the percentage of land as a total is dedicated to row crop agriculture in the Hills region. So moving into just a little justification for the research we're doing, these data just reflect the average number of applications for tarnished plant bugs in the state of Mississippi from 1986 to 2010. The one thing to point out here is, as you notice, it is broke out by Hills and Delta. If you notice, back in the 80s and all the way into the 90s, those lines were always fairly close. Maybe the Delta was always a little bit higher in terms of numbers of applications, but either way, it mirrored the Hills region very, very similarly. And then you notice around 2000, these lines start to become really divergent, and they start to spread apart, and we're making a lot more applications in the Delta region as compared to the Hills region, which has stayed relatively the same throughout. So there's a lot of questions as to why that is, and there's a few theories in play that we're all already aware of, one of them being resistance to field populations of tarnished plant bugs to the pyrethroids, as discovered by Dr. Gordon Snodgrass of USDA ARS in Stoneville in 1992. And again in 2006, Dr. Snodgrass discovered resistance in field populations in the Delta to the organophosphate class of insecticides. As I stated earlier, much less diverse ecosystem in the Delta is also thought to be one of the reasons, because it's primarily agricultural land, wide open. Not a lot of diversity as far as the ecosystem is concerned in the Delta compared to the Hills. So you take all that into consideration and you still ask the question, well, what else could be contributing to that? And that was the objective of this study. It was to determine factors that were actually associated with tarnished plant bugs themselves, specifically their biology and ecology, that could potentially impact their pest status among these two regions. And that was what we really wanted to look for in this study. So moving into the materials and methods, first off, this experiment was ran two times in its entirety, and adults were collected, two populations from each region, the Hills and the Delta, from Palmer pigweed. And at that point, they were transported back to the Mississippi State University rearing facility, where they were reared at 26.7 degrees Celsius with a 60% relative humidity and a 16:8 light to dark cycle, which is our standard protocol for rearing tarnished plant bugs there at Mississippi State. Once we returned to the rearing facility, the initial populations were separated into Rubbermaid containers, as you can see at the bottom, with the lid modified so that only the sealing frame remained. And the center of the lid was replaced with a fine, very similar to a bridal veil, a fine tule mesh screen for the purposes of placing egg packs and artificial diet packs on top of the screen so the plant bugs could access them for feeding and oviposition purposes. For our study, we placed one artificial diet pack. The diet used was a Meridic diet blend described by Dr. Alan Cohen in 2000, and then two egg packs were placed on top of each container. At this point, the two egg packs were removed every 2 days and split into cohorts within a colony. And at this point, they were allowed to hatch. And prior to third instar, all cohorts were fed the Meridic diet blend, as described earlier. And at third instar, the feeding treatments were initiated, while one cohort remained on the artificial diet and another began feeding on fresh cotton squares. The reason we chose third instar is, in our initial attempts at this experiment, we tried feeding all different life stages of plant bugs, plant bug nymphs, fresh cotton squares, and we had literally 0% survivorship until we started at Third Instar. So at that point, each of the cohorts, since they were split, was monitored daily for development times and then twice weekly for survivorship. Once these cohorts reached adulthood, they remained separate and were placed at a 1-to-1 sex ratio of up to 10 insects per gender and allowed to mate unhindered in those containers. And at this point, we monitored their fecundity performance by removing those egg packs every 2 to 3 days and give us a measure of fecundity expressed as eggs per female per day, and also to measure viable egg production expressed as nymphs per female per day. The data analysis in this project were as follows. The development curves were calculated through regression analysis, and that was developing our days to each instar for each of the food and region combinations. All other data was analyzed in PROC mixed and SAS using analysis of variance, with region of collection, food source, and region by collection serving as my fixed effects. Moving directly into the results, we'll first take a look at survivorship. If you'll turn your attention to the bottom of the screen, you'll see that only food had a significant impact on the survivorship of our tarnished plant bugs. We had significantly higher survivorship, those insects that remained on diet throughout their life, as compared to those that were fed fresh cotton squares. These data just show the development curves we used to develop days to each instar for tarnished plant bugs. Along your y-axis, you have days. Along your x-axis, you have instar. Tarnished plant bugs typically only have 5 instars. However, in order to quantify this, where we could actually use it, we designated adulthood as 6th instar. The one thing to point out is if you notice, these lines are curvilinear. So in order to develop that regression equations where we could use the equations to develop the days, we had to linearize it. We did so by cubing instars shown in this graph along the x-axis. And the equations that describe each of those lines were the equations we used to develop the days to each instar, which is shown here. The one thing to point out here, if you take a look, those insects collected in the delta region reared on cotton are denoted by the red bar, and their counterpart reared on cotton from the hills is denoted by the orange bar. The one thing to point out, at all life stages, those insects collected in the delta reared on cotton developed significantly faster than all other food and region combination. But at the slowest was those from the hills on cotton. So you're definitely looking at something here. And at this point, we really thought we've got something going on where these insects in the delta seem to be a little bit better adapted to life on cotton, especially compared to those from the hills. So as we move into our fecundity results, we'll first take a look at eggs per female per day. And again, if you'll turn your attention to the bottom of the screen, we see this time that both food source and region of collection had a significant impact on eggs per female per day. If you'll turn your attention to the right side of the graph, you see that you have about a 1.6-fold increase in eggs per female per day for those insects in the delta compared to those in the hills. And again, very similarly at the bottom, you see that those insects reared on cotton had about a 1.6-fold increase in eggs per female per day compared to those reared on diet. I do not show the data for nymphs per female per day, but very similar to this, both region and region of collection and food source was highly significant. And very similar to this, there's about a 1.5-fold increase in nymphs per female per day, which is our viable egg production measure for those insects in the delta compared to those in the hills. And very similarly, again, about a 1.5-fold increase from those insects reared on cotton as compared to those on diet. So in conclusion, we learned that region had no effect on survivorship of tarnished plant bugs. However, tarnished plant bugs from the delta region that were reared on cotton developed significantly faster than tarnished plant bugs reared on cotton collected in the hills region, approximately 2 days faster to each life stage. Also, tarnished plant bug populations from the delta region laid significantly more eggs than those from the hills, again about a 1.6-fold increase. And also, populations of tarnished plant bug reared on cotton as compared to reared on diet laid approximately 1.6-fold more eggs, which we certainly think validates the question of a biotype difference between Mississippi's two major agricultural regions. And that was the goal of this study, was to develop some baseline data to find out, is there really something going on biologically or ecologically with these populations of tarnished plant bugs and where to go from here. So now that I've presented all this data, talk about what it means kind of in a real world sense. For those of you unfamiliar, tarnished plant bugs don't have a true overwintering. They go into what's known as a reproductive diapause. It is very easily broken at the first sign of warm weather. It's not impossible to go out in January and find tarnished plant bugs if you have just a couple of days of warm weather. So with that, if you have that warm weather early and you stay warm early, similar to last year, you allow your populations to come out early, build up higher, you're dealing with higher populations throughout the season, but also coming out earlier, you're potentially dealing with an increased generation, tacking one generation on to the end of the year. And we've already seen the problems we have with tarnished plant bugs and the resistance issues. Another generation per year could really potentially further perpetuate the resistance issues we're having. And that's something very serious to both farmers, consultants, researchers, and everyone involved with cotton. So with that in mind, since we did have the issues that we found, and we found that we definitely did have a baseline for saying there's something going on, the next step, certainly the most important, would be to examine the genetic makeup of insects from both regions and determine if there's any differences that are possibly affecting their pest status in the different regions. And also, another good thing to look at would be to monitor the performance of tarnished plant bugs on other wild hosts more suitable than cotton, because as we know, cotton is not a very suitable host for tarnished plant bugs. It's just one of the most widely available hosts for them in the Delta region outside of the pigweed that's growing up everywhere there now. So also, possibly what improvements could we make to our artificial diet? As we saw, we weren't performing at optimum on our egg production, so there's certainly some tweaks we could possibly make there and kind of find out what's going on with that and improve on that. And with that, this is just a list of references used throughout my paper, and I'd be glad to take any questions that any of you may have. Yes, sir, Dr. Isaac. That's a good question. The question was, did I notice any behavioral difference among the different treatments? And the short answer to that is no. I didn't really observe it, so to speak. I didn't measure. That was one of the things, looking back, I wish I'd done. I wish I would have taken some fitness weight on the insects themselves as they were growing, and also if we'd had a measure of just how much food was in the artificial diet pack, you could also weigh that and get a determination of, are they eating more, like you said? Those were some things I thought about after the fact that certainly would have been good information to have as well. Yes, sir. Dr. Isaac again. I'm sorry, could you repeat that? The question was, what are my thoughts on improving artificial diet? I certainly think there are improvements that can be made to it. As far as what they are, that's something I would have to look into a lot further to really feel comfortable answering that question with any solid knowledge. But I certainly do think there are improvements that could be made. Thank you.